Welcome to a early morning, I guess I can't even call it late night, Baseball America Draft Podcast. It's 1 in the morning Eastern time, but we wanted to talk draft a little bit before we wrap up for the night, the first night of the MLB draft. I guess now we can call it the middle of the night from the MLB draft. But John Manuel's here with me, JJ Cooper here. We're going to talk a little draft. John is just off of doing the MLB Network draft show, and that was a fun watch as always. But John, we want to talk a little draft, and we'll just kind of dive into this. So there's a lot of different ways we could go with this, but I'll start off with, so what's a team that jumped out to you? Obviously, we are very early in how the entire draft will shake out, but what's a team that really stood out to you, really impressed you of what they did in day one?
Yeah, the one that jumps out off the top of my head is Colorado. Jim Callis and I discussed this before the last segment, and you know, I took Houston because they had the position players, but I really thought Colorado crushed it. And, you know, I loved, you know, look, their general manager saw their second pick. You know, Jeff Breidich was in to see Mike Nikorak because early in the year, I think they weren't the only team that thought that Mike Nikorak could be a single-digit pick. So they evaluated Mike Nikorak as a potential third overall pick early. Then they got Brendan Rodgers, so they got the best hitter and the best pitcher. And then they also got, in that class, the high school, very potentially the best high school hitter and potentially the best high school pitcher. That was a great way to start. And then, you know, adding in Peter Lambert, and I'm blanking right now, JJ, on their fourth pick, but I know I like their selections as well.
No,
who was their other pick? Do you have it handy? I'll find it if you don't.
I do not have it on hand right now. With this computer, if I bring up the browser, then things start getting wonky. So, but I think that to me, again, it starts with the fact that you get the number one player in the draft, and really, you know, not just on our board, but kind of generally thought of as the number one player in the draft, and you get them with your pick, and you're not picking one, you're not picking two. Yay. Good job.
Exactly.
I think the Astros are another team that really jumps out, as you would expect for a team that had $17 million to spend in this draft. They were going to dominate this draft much more than the Diamondbacks ever had a chance to dominate this draft because of the money they have. And you look at what they did, they dominated the first day of the draft, exactly like you would expect they would.
Yeah, there's really very few teams that could do what they did with Daz Cameron. And obviously they still have to sign him, you know, talk about $5 million, talk about $4 million. But no other team drafted three position players like that. And they went safest bet with the first one in Bregman.
Alex Bregman.
And then they got, the next, a little bit riskier with a high school bat, but Kyle Tucker, I think a pretty strong consensus that people believe that he's one of the best power hitters in the draft, if not the best power hitter. And then they go with the riskiest guy in terms of the signability in Daz Cameron. And then, oh, by the way, they threw in Thomas Eshelman, who I say threw in. I don't know if Thomas Eshelman can throw anymore. Since he was drafted, since he was used very aggressively tonight, earlier in the evening by Cal State Fullerton. Very disappointing for it's exciting that Fullerton got to Omaha. They were the last West Coast team standing, and they get there. They were the only one in Super Regionals, and they win it on the road. But very disappointing that they had to do it by using a pitcher on one day's rest. And they're just going to have to wear that one. There's no positive spin there in my mind, except for the fact that they did get to Omaha. I like what the Astros did. I will throw in, it was Tyler Nevin that the Rockies took at 38. I like Tyler Nevin. I didn't like him as much as 38, but I still like him. It is amazing that the Rockies' passion for drafting high school third baseman, whether it was Arenado or last year Kevin Padlow and Ryan McMahon. I mean, don't stop till the plant a rock, you know? I mean, they love high school third baseman. And if they're from Southern California, all the better. All four of those guys, I believe, are SoCal guys. So kind of amazing that they like that phylum of player, the SoCal high school third baseman. But I still like what the Rockies did.
Now, it's interesting, and I was on Twitter all night, and so I got to notice this a lot. But the Braves fans are pretty much in it. Again, it's Twitter, so there's no, I kind of like that, or, you know, whatever. It's the place for, let me be as over the top as I can, but Braves fans seem to be incensed by their draft. So I wanted to ask you, the Braves took a, for a team that had five picks, they took a somewhat kind of high-risk portfolio approach tonight, with the first pick and the last pick of their draft tonight, first day. But what did you think overall? Colby Howard, their number one pick. They didn't follow that up with Mike Soroka, Austin Riley, Lucas Herbert. They got the entire San Clemente battery with Allard and Herbert. And then A.J. Minter, which with their supplemental second-round pick. What do you think of that?
You know, I definitely when the Soroka pick, that's where I think it got some people, because when Mike Soroka was picked, you know, it surprised me a little bit that he went that high. It surprised me a lot, actually. And I had a scout with another team saying, Mike Soroka here? I'm not, you know, maybe I'm not that good of a scout, you know. I do like Austin Riley. You know me and Mississippi high school kids. Mm-hmm. I like that phylum, too. Use that word again. I thought A.J. Minter was intriguing. I think there's going to be some signability. Like, I have to imagine that's way higher than he thought he was going to go. Mm-hmm. So they're probably going to save a little money there.
Yes.
I love the Colby Allard pick at 14. I just love it. Love it. I mean, so that's the pick I'm convicted in. So to me, the picks that I was most convicted in for them, and I know that high school catchers is a risky demographic, but boy, this group of brave scouts, especially Roy Clark, when he was scouting director, had success with Jared Saltamacchia, had success with Brian McCann, right in this range, supplemental and second round picks. So I don't think the Braves draft is terrible. I don't think it's the way that other teams would have lined them up. But, you know, the one thing I do like about Soroka is it sounds like he really spins a breaking ball, you know, and fresh arm. You know, hey, if he winds up having a Chris Rietzma career, which is the easy comp because he worked out with Rietzma, he's from Alberta like Rietzma, and highest pitcher drafted, you know, since Rietzma out of that area. And if he has that kind of career, and the Braves got some of that goodness from Chris Rietzma as well, then they'd be pretty happy with that. So Austin Riley's the wild card there, some strength-oriented kid who wants to play third base, send him out, see if the power's there. And if it's not, you can put him on the mound. So do I think it's the best draft? No. I mean, I don't think it was the best first-day performance, but I think pretty excited about it. And, you know, it is what we thought it would be in terms of a little bit riskier, you know, than other teams' drafts, but why not go for it? This draft class didn't have a whole lot of sure things, so I like what Atlanta did, frankly. I like Herbert, and it's really carried for me by the Allard-Herbert combination. I really like that a lot.
The draft I loved was for a team that didn't pick till 24. Again, they got to sign them all, but I love what the Dodgers did.
I fully endorse that. You go ahead first.
Walker Buehler, Kyle Funkhauser, Mitchell Hanson, Josh Spores. Obviously, the thing that jumps out, again, part of this is really, it just comes down to you like them after day one because they get guys who you don't expect to be available at their pick. I did not expect that the Dodgers picking 24-35 would land Walker Buehler and Kyle Funkhauser. I would say that I'm not even, I have some concerns with both those guys.
Right.
But I sure love the risk-reward profile when you take Buehler 24 and when you take Funkhauser 35. And
completely agree.
If you can sign Hanson at 67, I think that's if, but you, I think they took him in the second round because they think they can. If you can sign Hanson also, that's a high-ceiling, pretty smooth outfielder there. That could be a very, very good top three picks. Again, yes, they had two first-round picks because they had the 35th pick also, but that being said, they didn't pick till 24. I'm pretty impressed.
All three of those guys were rated higher than where they went. And Funkhauser dropped for, as we discussed on the show, for a combination of signability and ability. And then Walker Buehler dropped, I think, more on his ability. Mitchell Hanson, I think they're obviously it's a Stanford commit, right?
Yes.
I mean, so there's some questions there, but you know, that guy looks like they're supposed to look, and I don't see how he's so different from the rest of these high school, you know, outfielders. I think he fits right in talent-wise with all those guys. Josh Spores is the guy to watch here for this year. Could Josh Spores be the fastest guy to the big leagues from this draft class? He could. I mean, look at the delivery. It is not conventional. and he was electric the ACC tournament as a starter for seven innings. And he was the same thing out of the bullpen. You know, Hudson wrote about it, was tweeting about it during the Super Regional. This guy could help the Dodgers in the bullpen this year. Don't be surprised if Josh Boers rushes up to the big leagues with the Dodgers and is pitching some crucial innings down the stretch for these guys. I mean, it was a strong first day for, you know, a Dodgers group that, you know, Billy Gasparino, who moved up. Hey, look, they're filling some big shoes, JJ. How many years have we been talking about how great Logan White is? You know, we love Logan White because Logan White has a great track record as a scouting director. And he'd been the scouting director from, what, 2001 or whatever year alone he was drafted first, 01, 02, for about 7 years, then the 3 years where he wasn't, and then he went back to it. And he was really good at it. So Billy Gasparino and this crew had to rebuild it. And, you know, they brought over Jack Crescent from the Rays. He's a pitching cross-checker. And you're talking about Spores, Funkhauser, and Buehler. Three college power right-handed arms. That's pretty good. To me, the Dodgers are definitely on the short list of good drafts. I like that call.
Well, I do think also the most obvious draft, I guess, is a little bit of a poor way to do it, but I will say that. You look at what the Cubs did, and what the Cubs did fits exactly what you would expect the Cubs to do. They go Ian Happ, and then they go Donnie DeWeese. Is that right? Not fit the Cubs profile to a T?
It absolutely does. Their selection at 9 had to be tough this year, JJ, because it felt like that was one of the teams that, you know, with the uncertainty in the first 10 picks, prompted in large part by the uncertainty of whether anyone would draft Daz Cameron, and if there were going to be any other deals in that top 10 picks. You know, they wanted a college bat, and that's what they do. That's what Theo does. That's where the teams that use analytics a lot to direct their first round selections and later selections really believe that you get more value with bats at the top of the draft. See Astros, Houston. You know, I mean, they know they need pitching, but if you can find Colin McHugh and Dallas Keuchel as a seventh rounder and these kind of guys, you get stars in the draft, and especially with hitters. And that's what those teams believe, teams that are a little bit more analytical. That's why the Red Sox wanted a hitter so badly and were able to get Andrew Benintendi. And that's what the Cubs do. So the top of the draft, I mean, and look at Jason McLeod's track record. I mean, he's done it in Chicago with Bryant, Schwarber, now Happ. I don't think Happ is in the orbit of those other two guys.
No.
Mind you. I like him. He's not in their orbit.
There's not a guy in this draft necessarily who might be in that orbit.
I agree completely with that. And then, you know, Donnie DeWeese, JJ, you'll laugh at this. I'm trying to make you laugh. Jim Callis tried to put me up to it. It was all I could do when it was my turn to talk about Donnie DeWeese to not just cock my mouth over to the side a little bit, put on my Tim Wilkin voice and talk about Donnie DeWeese as that Atlantic Sun Conference guy, because I did talk about the Atlantic Sun Conference thing, but those are two college performers in a draft that, and I do think when we look back, this draft class, 2015 in general, will be a really interesting test of the analytics, because this is a college position player draft. that's really what it turned into.
With new balls that changed the stats completely this year.
Right, with the analytics having to catch up to new data. I completely agree. Now, the two guys the Cubs got, I'll give them credit. They're athletic. They both can run a little bit. Are they premium athletes? No. Are they middle of the diamond guys? You know, DeWeese might be a stretch in center field, you know, because like I talked about, the arm strength.
Happ could be a stretch at second base.
He could be. So maybe, and that's the thing to
me.
Not
that the Cubs need more second basemen.
Correct. I mean, like, but here we were talking about the number 9 player in the draft. And when Harold Reynolds and Dan O'Dowd talked about him and John Mayo a little bit too, they basically compared him to like a poor man's Zobrist, but they basically called him a utility guy. And that's essentially what they called him, a versatile. They kept saying versatile. None of them said utility, but that might be him. I mean, I don't know who the Tony Phillips of our generation is. You know, I guess it's sort of Ben Zobrist, but Ben Zobrist can play short, but he can play shortstop for JJ, and this guy can't. And, and Tony Phillips wasn't really a shortstop, so that's what makes Zobrist so much more
if valuable. If he's not the Tony Phillips of this generation, Ian Happ, maybe he's the Jerry Brown.
Nice. Or the Mark McLemore, since that's one of the comps that HR used, and because Mark McLemore was vital on my retro 2001 116 win team. But I digress.
We'll wrap it up with one more. It is 1:30 in the morning. We'll wrap up with one other first draft for them, for Johnny Almaraz as the Philly scouting director. I give it, it's very early, only two picks, two rounds in, but thumbs up. Cornelius Randolph, Scott Kingery, very similar to what we were talking about with the Cubs draft. Hey, take the premium bats.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, look, Cornelius Randolph, I like that pick at 10. I'm sorry, I didn't suss that one out before, but I really like that pick at 10. That guy can hit, stick him in left field and forget it. You know, you don't have to,
Which is what they seem to be doing.
That's it. You just don't have to force it. And then Scott Kingery at 48. College position draft, how's Scott Kingery at 48? I think there's a little bit of too cuteness there with some of these analytics teams because he doesn't walk. I like Scott Kingery. I know that I have made the Gary Brown comp on him a lot. It probably scares people a little bit. But so there's reason to be a little worried there. But I like the athlete. All I know is they got the Pac-12 Player of the Year at 48. And he's a guy who has a chance to stick at second base.
Right. They got the Pac-12 Player of the Year who plays an up-the-middle position and has a pretty good chance to be able to stay there.
And he runs. I mean, you know, the things that he needs polish on, defense, base running, those kind of things, those are things that big league clubs are better at teaching than anybody else because they have a base running coordinator and they have infield coordinators. And you have unlimited time to work on those things that you don't have at Arizona. So I like that pick. Great call. Johnny Almaraz, good first day.
So anything else before we wrap up, or is it time to hit the bed?
It's time to hit the bed. I got an early flight, but I got to just tell you, JJ, I am going to get self-indulgent for a minute.
Great. This is what I look forward to in a 1:30 podcast.
Sappy self-indulgence. I'm just going to say how inspirational it's been to work with you this spring, your first draft, and just how you killed it, and, just how not easy it is to cover a draft. It is fun.
It's fun to cover
the draft, but you embrace the fun part of it, and it's just it's an honor and a privilege to work with you on the draft, and you've just killed it this year, and just can't thank you enough. Teddy and Hudson too, but they're not on the podcast, so singling you out, but just thank you for that, and I just love hearing the excitement in your voice at 1 o'clock in the morning after draft day. You're just so geeked for it, and that just gets me geeked for it. So thank you.
Well, thank you. It's going to hit me tomorrow morning. I promise you that. But right now I could go for another hour or two. I mean, it's first day of the draft. The first day of the draft is the fun day.
The second day
is a mixture of fun and a little bit of drudgery. And then day three is just drudgery.
You know. Day three is like, let's just cut this draft to 20 rounds.
Yes. Day three is like, I'm hoping I'm going to enjoy it more this year because, again, I'm fascinated to see. We ranked 1,275 players. Now, we're not going to go 12-16 for 12-16. I would love that, but we're not. That being said, I am fascinated to see how many of the guys that get drafted we actually already, you know, kind of ranked. And my hope is that we're actually going to be somewhere in that 65-70% range. And
that would be pretty killer. It really would be with a pretty new crew on the draft. It'd be pretty killer.
There's a reason it's funny. I'll wrap up with this. I know the draft map. It's funny. People always like to think of it like in the past. Like I remember when they used to have the draft map up by May 11th. And it's like, I haven't responded on the comments that we'd love to say that we did. We've never had the draft map up by May 11th. Yeah. It always ends up being this. It's a race to the finish. Thankfully, we did finish in time. We had everyone ranked before, a few hours before the draft. But there's a reason that we write up over 500 players, you know, but the BA 500, and then we rank well beyond that because we do think that the second day and the third day of the draft are really important. And we thank you, BA subscriber. If you listen to this podcast and you subscribe, we thank you because yep. you doing that is what allows us to cover this draft to a level of depth that we believe you deserve. It's not something where we're in and out after the first round or the second round, or we're in and out after the first day or the second day. The third day matters too. And partly the third day matters, some of it because there's guys who are going to be big leaguers, but part of it matters because also there's guys who are going to be good minor leaguers, and there's guys who are interesting stories. And we want to know about that. We want to tell you about that. And that's what's fun about this.
So that's a big part of what's fun about it. It's an area scout day. That third day is an area scout day. And you know what? We talk to a lot of area scouts. We rely on those guys. In a lot of ways, they're the foundation of professional baseball. They are the people who are kind of the gatekeepers in a lot of ways to when amateur baseball players become professional baseball players. And that's a day to celebrate those guys, the work they put in, the miles they drive, the time they log. And it's the least we can do for our position in the game at Baseball America to cover that day like we try to cover the first day. So, but that third day does become a slog. There's no doubt about that. It is an important day for baseball. And, you know, Bill Bavasi was telling me about this at the winter meetings just after this year. You know, maybe that getting drafted for that high school player in the 30-something round, maybe that's the thing that keeps that guy playing baseball and going to junior college to play baseball instead of giving it up after high school. You know, it might be the difference for some of those players. So it is – we just don't know. So I do think that the draft, if you had fewer rounds, they would matter more. I think that's possible. But right now –
And that wouldn't take anything away from the area scouts because there still be guys who get signed after the draft.
Absolutely. And I don't think you cut it to 10 rounds. I think you cut it to 20. You still are taking a lot of guys and you're filling a lot of rosters. So, but it's 140, so we should get going. But I just love to hear the enthusiasm in your voice this late at night on your first draft night where you were heavily involved in the draft coverage. You've always contributed, but and I just look forward to
it. Oh, it was much more heavy lifting this year than the past.
No doubt. But I look forward to that extra 30% contributing to your indie ball coverage afterwards.
by the way, I'm hoping to get an indie ball, one of my favorite indie ball guys signed today to an affiliated club. If that happened today, it would have made it for the perfect day.
Outstanding, JJ. Great work.
But, well, for John Manuel, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everyone. We know you're probably listening to this on Tuesday morning. We'll have a whole lot more draft coverage Tuesday and Wednesday. Thanks, everyone.